My name is Bonnie Landry. I'd like to welcome you to my podcast with my co-hosts, Elizabeth and Christina, where we explore the questions about homeschooling and family life and how we can make joy normal.
How are you, Elizabeth?
Good. How are you?
Happy New Year. I haven't seen you for weeks, I think.
I know. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Late to the party, but that's okay.
Right.
Yes. I think because our time frame is a little bit short tonight, why don't we just get straight into questions and see where we're going. And we had some questions submitted, so I know you've got some of those.
Yes. So our first question is from Allison, and she wants to know, what are your thoughts on giving the oldest many responsibilities in big families? Not sure what our future family will look like, but right now it feels big at times. It just happens so naturally that I rely on her older daughter in challenging situations to set the tone or be an extra set of hands, helping to calm a child, doing a quick extra chore. And she's just worried that her daughter is going to totally reject wanting to be a mom or be resentful of her for having more responsibility than others. Do you see this play out as a good thing? Or, a way to encourage virtue? Or should we as parents be mindful?
Yeah, I think, sort of the short answer is both and. I think it's a good question. And I think that many of us wonder this, am I putting too much on my older child or older children? And so I think it's really a good idea to address it. And I think it's one of those things that we need to tread carefully. So I grew up in a small family. Okay, we had three kids. My husband grew up in a bigger family. They had six kids, but all of his cousins had big families. They were actually the smallest anywhere from six in the kids to 12 kids. Okay. So big families, and a lot of them lived close by each other, saw each other a lot. And I remember one of his older cousins saying, she was probably 10 or 15 years older than him, when we were first getting married, saying something about, not liking being the oldest in a big family because her parents she was like a built-in babysitter and she just had to look after her younger siblings all the time. And that affected me quite deeply, that comment, because I didn't want there to be resentment amongst my own kids because of the level of help or service or whatever that they give. And at the same time, recognizing that, yeah, of course it's a practice of virtue to help out in a family. And I think it's also one of the things we see in big families is that it's absolutely essential that everybody helps out. That's what builds a community. That's what builds people into serving people, right? That's how we learn to serve one another. But that comment really stayed with me. And so it was something that I very minimally asked my older kids to babysit their younger siblings. Once in a blue moon, we would do something, or I would have to go out and I would leave them looking after their siblings. But I felt personally, this is just my own personal opinion, but I felt personally that babysitting your siblings a lot would probably lead to resentment, right? It just seems to me that if you did that a lot, it was going to lead to resentment if too much responsibility to look after your siblings was put on you. We're just walking a bit of a tightrope with that particular question, how much is too much? For me, asking my older children, are you willing to watch your younger siblings occasionally? Is that a discussion that we can have? Do you feel, if you ever feel like I'm putting too much responsibility on you, let's talk about that. So I think having a really open and honest relationship with your teenagers becomes a really important part of family dynamics, because if they feel like they can't say anything to you, that you're going to get mad if they say, I feel like I don't have enough time to do my schoolwork, or don't have enough time to visit with my friends, or don't have enough time for this or that. Just being sensitive to how they might be feeling and opening up the door for them to say, listen, if you feel like this is too much for you, please let me know. And let's talk about what is reasonable. And I think the very same thing with help around the house. Is it important that they help around the house? Of course it is, right? Help with their younger siblings. Of course it is. That's part of a family dynamic that's healthy and good. But keeping the door open, being aware of maybe when it's too much and being sensitive to how much you're asking, because some kids are very cooperative. They'll always just say, yeah, even if they're feeling like it's too much or that it's taking too much time away from the other things that they need to get done or want to get done. We need to be respectful of that. I think that in our own family, that open dialogue helped us to get strike a pretty good balance. As my kids got older, my girls they looked forward to being mothers. They looked forward to motherhood. They felt, prepared in many ways for motherhood because they had helped out with younger siblings. They also you know, we're able to verbalize, like, no, I don't think you put too much on us. I don't think that you asked for our help too much. There's, of course, a sliding scale. So if I'm going to ask them for help, do I need to be asking the five-year-old to help out in their capacity that they're able to as well? Of course I do. You know, you push in the chairs, you carry the dishes to the counter, whatever. We need to be providing opportunities for those littler people to help out as well. You know, I think a lot of it is about balance and being sensitive, but also really keeping the door of dialogue open for your kids. And it's really important.
I have to wonder, if you look at society as a whole, in our current age, it seems that children are looked upon as a burden and not a blessing. And so I think it also has to be a question in your family. Are those younger siblings that, you know, mom or dad are asking, you know, can you help me with them? Are they being, is it being communicated that, you know, these kids are blessings? There are times where, okay, I need to switch the laundry. You know, my youngest, who's just almost 6 months old, only wants to be held or needs that attention and needs those watchful eyes to make sure, because she's just starting those little pincher fingers for the tiniest things, you know. And so asking my 10-year-old, can you sit with her for a second, you know, play with her, you know, whatnot. But it's in a very much like, love on your sister, right? Help me, you know, keep her safe and stuff. And so I'm just kind of wondering if it also depends on the tone, right? If kids are feeling like the siblings and taking care of a baby and stuff is such a burden, then maybe that's what rolls over. And it might not always be so much they're being asked to help.
But the tone in which you ask.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great point, Elizabeth. I'm glad you brought it up, because it's a guarantee if you act towards your toddlers or your babies like, oh, I have to pick the baby up again. Oh, I have to be, you know, and of course we have moments like that. But if that's the general tone of your household, was these little people are really driving me insane and I'm trying to get away from them all the time. That's a tone that is guaranteed going to establish that amongst your kids, right? But if you are cheerful and joyful, and even sometimes when you're having a hard day, just saying, you know, this is a beautiful thing, you know, and I should never complain. But sometimes, you know, I'm just really tired, I didn't get a good night's sleep last night and or whatever. So that, again, your honesty with them, and also respecting that maybe they're trying to finish a test that they're doing in their science, and you ask them to do something and they, you know, have this panic stricken look on their face, and you could say, I understand. Okay. Right now is not a good time. You know, let me know when it's a good time and we'll figure something else out. You know that, but yeah, absolutely approaching it with the dignity towards the children, right? And of course, towards the older children as well, that just plays out hugely in family life about how people view children in general.
Right. You know, just a quick story. So I had to take my almost 6 month old with me to the chiropractor today. And I really just wanted to go start our car because it's like 14 degrees here in Michigan, or colder at times. So I asked my oldest to come hold his sister, and he kind of looked at me like, really? I mean, okay. And I said, it's just for a second. I just need to go get the car warmed up. And he goes, good. Okay, good. Cause she's been so fussy lately. And he's like, I can't take care of her while you're at the chiropractor. Like, my husband works from home, but, you know, just assuring him that, no, it's just for a second, you know?
Yes, exactly. And also, you know, that's something that, again, we sort of let the reins out slowly, you know, with our 8-year-olds or our 10-year-olds or whatever, 5-10 minutes at a time, you know, 20 minutes, you work up slowly to getting that help. One of the things that we did when, you know, had a whole bunch of kids at home, I would ask, you know, usually our sit down work took about 20 minutes per child, right? 20 to 30 minutes, say. And so I would ask one older sibling to watch, you know, the child who was sort of the one in, you know, getting into trouble and danger, you know, say between 6 months and two kind of thing. You know, can you watch them for 20 minutes while I work with so-and-so? And then I would switch so that they weren't watching them while, you know, I did 2 hours of sit-down work with everybody, that I would switch them out. It's okay, now you take a turn. Just follow them around, or, you know, play dollies with them. Or if you want me to get out the Play-Doh, I can do that or whatever. Just keep them busy for 20 minutes while I'm, you know, doing this. That was just I think, a good way of sort of keeping balance, right? That everybody was sort of helping out.
It's a really good question because, you know, we do rely on those older ones to just help in some capacity. And I remember because my sister is 10 years younger than me, and I was so excited to finally get a sibling. But the one thing every single adult would tell me / my mom was, oh, you have a built-in babysitter. And to me, I was like, I'm a sister. I'm excited to be a sister. Stop calling me a babysitter. It's almost like a downgrade or something.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's a good thing to be aware of and a good thing to bring to the fore, right? Because I think many of us do wonder about this. Some kids at a very young age are quite responsible with younger siblings and some are not. And so again, that plays into it too, sort of capacity to entertain a small child, right? So, I mean, you might have a 7 or 8 year old who's quite capable of sitting with your child for 5 minutes while you're in the washroom, right? You might have another child the same age who would just forget and wander off, right? And so that's something too, is that, you know, we're kind of in a position where we know, okay, eventually the maturity will come. But, you know, sometimes it's actually even a younger sibling that's actually the more able to do the 5 minutes than an older sibling is. And sometimes this is the difference even between boys and girls, just the distractibility. It's not always a boy-girl thing, but often, you know, I would say my girls were much more inclined to stay tuned in than the boys were. It just took longer to get to that level of maturity, right? So we have to, you know, kind of be aware that they're actually capable of doing 5 minutes or whatever it is.
But what's interesting is, so my 7-year-old, I cannot trust him to help me with the baby. But he's the one that's always willing to do it. So it's hard, you know, giving him easy little tasks, like when I'm in the same room or something, you know, where he.
Yeah. You know, or do it together with his other sibling. Maybe that would be another way of approaching it. Right. Yeah. 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 And I think if kids are balking at that, like if they're balking and, oh, I don't want to or whatever, then I think it's worthwhile saying, you know, hey, you know, it's really important that we pull together. There's lots of things that need doing in our household, you know, and I don't mean in a lecturing, you know, finger pointing kind of way, but just in order to get the food made, in order for us to have time to do the fun things, we just need to pull together as a family. So that's important.
I'm like a broken record with that because I've been instructing my children since they were small to put things away before they go to the next thing. But the problem with that is when you have 3 siblings playing the exact same thing and one is done, but the others aren't. So that one goes off and does something else and gets something else out. And so anyway, my house is just constantly a mess. And I keep telling them, you have to pick up after yourself. Otherwise, we don't have time to do the things you want to do, the family read-alouds, the games, you know, like you have to pull your own weight to some capacity here, you know, and that's a constant struggle in my house.
Yeah, 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 and finding the balance between, you know, reminding and lecturing. Yeah.
Yes, oh my gosh. Yeah, those sleepless nights with a baby when, you know, your patience is waning that next day.
No kidding.
Every single day I get emails, every single day, from people who want to be guests or share their product on my podcast, which is great. It means that lots of people are listening. Most of them I dismiss because I feel like they're not maybe suitable for my readers or wouldn't be of interest to my listeners. However, several months ago, I received an email from a company called Tonybox asking if I would interview somebody from Tonybox that would share about their product. And the product actually really caught my attention, so I decided I would. So that interview, it really explains what Tonybox does. Tonybox is a product that builds imagination. It's a screen-free digital listening experience that plays songs and stories. And it also has a creative component where you or your child can make up your own stories or songs. You can record yourself and put it on your Tonybox. It is simple enough for a 3-year-old to use. I gave a Tonybox to my grandkids because I just thought this is an amazing product. I've seen it in action. I've seen them play with it. I've seen them use it and be thrilled by it and be able to use it completely independent. That doesn't require any parent input, which is fantastic for busy parents. I'll put a link to the Tony Box in the show notes. And I'm also going to link a blog post where I have a picture of my granddaughter with her Tony Box, so you can get a sense of what it's like. The team at Tony Box are fantastic. They are passionate about bringing you an awesome product. Their customer service is remarkable. I am so grateful for Tony Box supporting this podcast.
So do we, should we move on to the next question?
Yeah, yeah. Would you be able to describe how to lead in a relationship with your child or children? Like, how do you build healthy leadership as a parent and to build secure attachment with your kids?
Okay, so that is, to me, those are two different questions, how to build leadership and how to build attachment. So I think that one of the primary ways that we build attachment is by not cutting off our child, right? Not, you know, in our household, and the sort of the formation that I received about that was very strongly from sort of Gordon Neufeld and the Neufeld Institute, that ultimately punishment is a tool that can be very detrimental to attachment, right? That we walk alongside our child rather than just handing out a punishment for, you know, whatever it is they've done wrong, that we walk alongside them and we explain to them, we take them in hand, we explain to them, we disciple them, we teach them. This is why, you know, we can't be doing this. And there might be reparation required, like say they broke something, you know, is that that's something that I'm going to need to replace now. There might be reparation involved, but as opposed to punishment, right? That's something that's very detrimental to attachment in general. But securing healthy attachment, we are always allowing our emotional end to be available to our children, right? Regardless of what their emotions are, regardless of what their behavior was, that we don't cut off, we don't get angry. We walk beside them in their distress, in their naughtiness, in whatever it is they're handing out. I will put the link to the show with Deborah McNamara in these show notes, because she just goes into the idea of how do we secure attachment so much more fully. And it's something that deserves, you know, really more than one episode. And how do we develop secure attachment? You know, the entire premise on which I'm working is for the way we homeschool and the way that I discipline and all of those things are to the end of providing secure attachment for my children, you know, and we're going to fail all the time, but ultimately the more we practice, the better we get at it. And also the higher the percentage is that we're actually practicing attachment, we're pursuing attachment practices, we are going to have better attached kids. Right? Every kid comes out of the womb with their also a capacity to attach, which is very, very high, or could be compromised for some reason, right? So some kids we have to work harder, but I would really direct people to that particular episode, because it was really, really good. She's a fantastic resource in terms of attachment. So let's just sort of flip over to leadership for a moment. How did she phrase that? Just pull that out of the question again.
How to build healthy leadership as a parent.
Right. Okay. So I'm not quite sure if it means how do you lead your children in a healthy way, or how do you create children who are healthy leaders, okay, who are leaders in their peer groups or their society or whatever. And I think that my sense is that, in a sense, that question, it's the same question. Because by providing healthy leadership doesn't mean your children are going to be leaders but they're not going to be followers necessarily, right? So you want them to be stand on their own two feet. You want them to be able to not follow along with the crowd, doing things that the crowd is doing that go against your moral framework you're dealing with. So leadership in general, like I think we all have the capacity to lead in our spheres. Now, sometimes that's very much a one-on-one thing that we are able to charitably enter into conversation with somebody, that whether it's a friend or someone we don't know very well or whatever, that we can explore ideas in a strong moral way with both charity and clarity. Right? So we can be charitable to the other, and we can also make our ideas really clear. And that in and of itself is a leadership skill. In terms of being leaders in amongst their peers or amongst their community or whatever, I think that we need to tackle leadership in some way as parents to show our kids that it can be done. Now, we might not have natural leaders. We might not be a natural leader. Okay. But I think that we should still take on roles of leadership, even when it takes us outside our comfort zone. It doesn't mean you're going to be the person in your peer group, in your church, in your community that is planning all the activities and doing all the things. But if you can do your part, even if that's hard for you, I think that that's really good for kids to see that. Say, for example, I'm going to use the homeschool community as an example. Okay. Say you belong to a homeschool group or not even official group, just a bunch of homeschooling families that get together. For you to recognize what your strengths are. Okay. I'm kind of a quiet person or whatever. We really love nature walks. So why don't I offer to host a nature walk once a month? And I could teach the kids about the different local plants, maybe whatever. I could just share my knowledge with the kids about what I know and love. And in a person's quiet way, they are taking on a leadership role. Or, you notice that somebody else is planning all the things, right? It tends to be, I'm that person, one of the people in our community that's, I plan a lot of things. And it's always been really helpful to me to have somebody who's maybe not as inclined to plan things say, hey, what can I do? Right? What can I do to be helpful here? And so if I can pass off a job to that person that takes the load off me of the things that I'm not as good at, like I'm not a details person, right? So if I'm planning a conference or a talk, hey, can you be the coffee and snacks person? Usually the quieter person, the person's less inclined to be a verbal leader or a self-appointed leader. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that like, okay, I'm going to do this thing and I'm just going to do it. They would say, yeah, I love that, right? Or I can make phone calls or send the emails or whatever. That's a great way of showing leadership to your kids, even if you're not a leader personality, right? So of them amongst them, I think why that's important is because some kids will be natural leaders and sometimes we will be required to lead even when we're not natural leaders. Okay. So there's those two things. If your kids never see leadership from their parents, and in a homeschool, setting, you need to just be more aware of leadership, because I think we have a little broader range. Say if kids are in school, there's going to be some teachers or some peers that are naturally leader oriented. They might have more exposure to leadership qualities. And that may be good and it may be bad, right? There could be leadership that's negative. But, it's something that we should seek for us modeling it for them and for us encouraging them to do it as well. They get to be 13 or 14. Maybe they're a leader and maybe they're not. But for us to be able to say, what could we do? What could you do to help out? Well, I run this camp every year. I'm going to employ teens. Absolutely. If they come up to me and say, what can I do? If their parents come up to me and say, I'm going to give them a task, right? Because I think it's important for them to learn some leadership skills, even if it's a quiet form of leadership. By doing, for sure, we teach kids to lead by leading and promoting leadership, but it doesn't have to be noisy like me. Leadership can be very quiet, right?
Right, right. Well, if I could go back a little bit to secure attachment, one thing that I think it's important maybe to specify is, we as moms get angry throughout the day. They're, everything on our plate can lead to anger and frustration. And there are two things that I've learned as a mom is that's one, always be willing to apologize to your children, especially if you're wrong, right? Apologize if you lash out, apologize if you, accuse them incorrectly, show them that it's okay and it's safe to apologize. And the other thing is in our anger, especially if it's about something that they specifically did, don't cut them off, right? So I think some people have a tendency to, be like, well, I'm mad at you, so I'm not going to talk to you until I've calmed down. It's detrimental to kids. And so what I do is I'll tell my children, I'm really upset with you right now because, you did this. But that doesn't stop me from talking to them throughout the day. you know, getting them their food, taking care of their needs. You know, it's just because kids do need to learn that things that they do upset people. But there are ways to communicate that and make them feel secure in their relationship with their parents, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, back to the idea of punishment, that we are, it's the ultimate punishment to cut yourself off from your kids. Right. So when we're talking about carrot and stick, it is the ultimate stick. You know what? You can't have me. I'm not going to be nice to you. I'm not going to talk to you. I'm going to remove myself from you. You know, that is the ultimate punishment that we can give our kids, is to not. So when I use the phrase keeping your end, you know, your end open, right, that's really vital, because that can be terrifying for a child to have you cut yourself off from them. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And of course, yeah, the younger the child, the more terrifying it is. Right. And we're training them to do it, right? Anything we do, you know.
Well, would it still be your definition of a punishment if, say, you know, you're like, something upsets you and you tell your kids, I'm angry, I need to step away for a few minutes? That's different, right?
It's different, not like, totally, yeah. No, and, you know, being able to verbalize what you need, that's not a punishment. But saying, you get out of this house. I need to be away from you. You get out of this house right now. You know, and even separation, like to separate ourselves from, to say, I need to step away because I'm upset. I want to gain mastery over my feelings right now, right, or whatever. That's not a punishment. But if you said, I'm going to my room and I'm locking the door and you can't come in, that's a punishment, right? So you might be accomplishing the same end. You're taking a few minutes, but one is absolutely going to be, you know, punishment. One is going to be a boundary or a practical decision that you make, but it's the delivery, really. It all comes down to the delivery you're making, because often what's punishment and what is the consequence of a particular circumstance will look the same. Right. For example, I've used this example before, but for example, if, say, bedtime, you want your kids' lights out at 8 o'clock. If you say, you know, it gets to eight, and you say, okay, well, if you're not ready by 8 o'clock, then it's lights out. We don't get a story or whatever, you know, that's the paradigm you're working with, whatever it is, that, you know, if you get to 7:30 and you're saying, I told you, you're not going to be ready. You get ready. I told you. You're hanging it over their head. And then maybe they mess around and they don't have time for a story and lights are out at 8 o'clock. You could say, I told you, let's go, lights out 8 o'clock. And that was it. And you didn't get your story and that's your problem. A completely different approach than, you know what, sweetheart, we have to have lights out by 8 o'clock. Otherwise everybody's grumpy in the morning. Or we have to get up earlier, or whatever your reason is for deciding that. We'll have to just learn to get ready a little quicker tomorrow. So, but that's, you know, that's what we're dealing with. So it's a completely different delivery, right? So one is punishment oriented. One is discipleship oriented. I'm teaching you a thing without being angry, without finding fault, without anything. Just, no, here's the facts. It's 8 o'clock. Yeah. The light goes out.
Yeah. Well, do we have time for one more?
I think so. Yeah, I think we have time for one more.
Okay. This one might not be too heavy, but I was wondering if you could give some ideas on how to reconnect with, you know, a child when life has been crazy with illness, or maybe the focus has been on another sibling because of, you know, some special extracurricular that, you know, that they're in the limelight, right? And then you have, I know we have now a very specific middle child, and I see that we haven't been connecting with him, and I just don't know how. You know, I have little ideas of reading books, but sometimes small children make that hard. You know, like babies make it hard to read.
What age are we talking about?
5.
Okay. So, I mean, it, regardless of the age, but I'm just thinking it might look different depending on the age. But, you know, I would say that a lot of eye contact would be really important, you know, just getting down on their level, you even 3 or 4 times a day or whatever, and just saying, I love you so much, and holding their hands in your, you know, their face in your hands and looking them right in the eye and just saying, is there anything you need from me right now? You know, or something like that, just making sure that you're making the connection with them. But eye contact, especially at that age, so vital, right? Or if they're sad, or if they're, you know, just gathering them in, right? You sound so sad right now, you know, or maybe you see them and they look like they're lonely and they're playing quietly and they look like they're, despondent, maybe, right? That might be a really good time. And not only that time, just, you know, when they're happy too, but not only at that time, just be making a moment. It doesn't usually take very long. The younger the kid, the less effort it takes, really. Look them right in the eye, pull them up on your lap. I love you. Is there anything you would like right now? Can mommy fix you a snack? Would you like a kiss? Would, you know, and often that's all they need, right? But if we can just go in and touch several times a day, I think that that's probably the best thing we can do to reconnect in the big picture, right?
That sounds so easy and beautiful. I love it.
Let me know if it works.
I will.
Yeah. And I mean, of course, different ages, different things, right? Like sometimes say it was a 10 or 12 year old. To be able to say, you know, I'm going grocery shopping. Would you like to just come along for the ride and we can listen to music or we can talk or whatever? Could get you a little treat if you like. We can go to the grocery store. You know, that I think that we just need to learn how to speak their love language. Are you familiar with the love languages of children? Five love languages of children?
Yes. I'm having a hard time figuring out. I feel like I figure out what my kids are and then they switch right. it up on me. So
when I think one of the great comments in that book, I can't remember if it was the original book where I read this or that, or the actual love languages for children where I read it, was the younger a child is, the more of all the love languages they need, which is really true. And so, you know, we just have to sort of make outpourings of grace on our kids. That's how they feel loved. You know, it's quality time. It's words of affirmation.
Right.
It's physical touch. It's all the things, yeah. Right? Yeah. So yeah, let me know if that's something that feels like it's working.
Okay. Yeah, I will. Yeah.
All right. Should we wrap it up there?
Yeah. Sounds good.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, God bless and have a great week.
Thank you.
Okay.